That will come to order. Okay, over there. Senate will come to order. Order, order. Introduction and reading in of bills. House Bill 28. First reading of the House bill. Here you go. Right here.
House Bill 28, Education Reporting Children of Military Personnel, sponsored by the Education Committee. Passed the House, ayes 31, noes 28, excused 1.
House Bill 28 referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 21, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 21, State Parks Designations Updates, sponsored by the Travel Commission. Passed the House, ayes 56, noes 4.
House Bill 21, referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. Do we have reports from standing committees?
February 27, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred House Bill 23, Audit Requirements for Conservation Districts, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February 27, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 7, to whom was referred House Bill 40, Engrossed, Election Code Revisions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February 27, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 3, to whom was referred House Bill 4, Investment of State Funds Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinsky, Peterson, and Wasserberger, Senator Peterson, Chairman. February 27, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 3, to whom was referred House Bill 72, Engrossed, Ad Valorem Tax Collections, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinsky, Peterson, and Wasserberger, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Okay, bills on second reading. Mr. Minority Floor Leader, would you control that over there a little bit behind you on the Senate floor? Okay, Senate File 87. Second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 87, Hathaway Scholarship Eligibility, sponsored by Senator Kinsky.
Senate File 87, have me read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hear him, no objection. We have an objection. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. I object, and I object because I think it's an important one to talk about. We didn't have the opportunity during Committee of the Whole, and I just wanted to go over a few of the concerns that are raised in the committee meeting, and the good senator that's sponsoring this is aware of those, and I think he's got some thoughts on it as well that it would be good for the Senate to be aware of. So, Mr. President, the way this operates is it's a change to the Hathaway Success Curriculum for the highest two levels of the Hathaway, the honors and performance levels. And it does a few things that are inconsistent with some of the practices that we've taken over the years. And I would remind the Senate that this is a constant source of contention, that every year we look at the Hathaway Success Curriculum, every year we struggle with some of the concepts that are here. And for the past several years, we've left it alone. And part of the reason we've left it alone is because the consistency in these standards is essential. Every time we change the Hathaway Success Curriculum, you have to scrap the old ones and retrain everybody on the new standards. And that's a lot of confusion that comes forward. So there has to be good reason. We shouldn't be changing these without a significant amount of work, without the opportunity for a lot of public comment. And in fact, in the past, we've made this an interim study topic, I think 3 of the past 5 years, and then opted not to change anything after hearing all of the testimony. So the concerns with this legislation are twofold. The first is based on a noble intent, and that intent is to try and raise the participation for CTE students, and we all understand the importance of career and technical education to the state. But one of the ways it does that is by going into the top two tiers of Hathaway and adding the possibility that rather than just using a college entrance examination, a work keys score that is determined by the department to be equivalent to the minimum national percentile rank on a college entrance examination as required under this paragraph may be substituted. The concern there, Mr. President, is that just doesn't work. A work keys test is not a college entrance examination. You cannot have an equivalent score on a work keys to a college entrance examination because they're not testing the same thing. It's like an equivalent score on my driver's test versus a college entrance examination. They're equivalent scores, but they're not measuring the same thing, so you can't say those two things are equivalent. When we're talking about the success curriculum, particularly at the honors and performance levels, are based on college entrance. That's the concept. It's success in college. It's not just success in life. It's success in college. A work keys score is not an indicator for success in college. It's not intended to be. It's not advertised to be. That's why there are separate tests. So a high score on work keys is certainly valuable and it's meaningful, particularly in a career in technical education. We already allow them for the provisional and opportunity levels to count. But as a college entrance test, it doesn't work. The second concern, Mr. President, is when we look at page 4, the changes to what an elective pathway would be versus the current system. The current system, Mr. President, is a system in which we have, for the honors and performance levels, required 2 years of language and either 2 years of language, 2 years of arts, or 2 years of CTE concentrated. This would change it so that that requirement of 2 years of language goes away, so students would be qualified under the success curriculum without any language whatsoever, unless that was one of the three choices. And then they have the or of 3 years of fine and performing arts, 3 years of career technical education, or 3 years of foreign language in the same language where you can count one of those years from the junior high school experience. The concern there is that other colleges and universities around the country, when they're talking about what is successful, what is their entrance requirement, they require 2 or 4 years of language. For the first time since we've had the success curriculum, we would be saying it's okay not to take any language in high school, but you'll still be successful in college. But there's no data to indicate that that's accurate. In fact, quite the contrary, it's been traditionally accepted that those 2 years of language are essential for success in college. Most colleges require that still, or 4 years. Our university also requires those 2 years at this point in time, but we did match the success curriculum for the Hathaway. So I would caution the body, Mr. President, in supporting this legislation, and I would suggest that if we do want to study this again, once again, we'll make
thank you. Topic your time has expired.
The interim. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senate file 87 have been read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time here? No objections. So ordered. Senate file 92, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate file 92, electronic logging devices enforcement.
Senate file 92 has some amendments. Will the reading clerk please read in second reading amendment number 1?
Senate file 92, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, lines 1 through 14.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 92, ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, what we do is that we part of this is through recommendations to the staff. In that, in fact, all of it is. It's to more comply with the Federal Motor Carrier rules and regulations, and that we go in on in subsection S, Romanet 3, and after apply to, we insert motor carrier, and then in subsection FV, we also insert motor carrier. And then down after containing, we insert two or more. And that has to do, Mr. Chairman, with the That has to do, Mr. Chairman, with the amount of and I'm trying to track it in there, and I don't have the last amendment there. And so I'm at a standstill until I get that information. Maybe we have that. Thanks, Tara. Okay. And that's containing two or more, and that's in paragraph F. And that has to do with I'm having a brain cramp on that one, Mr. Chairman.
You want to lay it back?
I'll sit down. I'll take a look at it there. And it has to do with components. Yeah, there it is, Mr. Chairman. Components that are prior to year 2000. And you can have one, the way it reads is that you can have one component. And the federal law says that you have to have two or more to comply with necessarily a vehicle past the year 2000 being allowed to be considered a year vehicle before the year 2000. And that's actually in the rules and regs. Good. Came back, Mr. President. Woo-hoo!
Further discussion. We're voting on second reading amendment number one to Senate Bill 92. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
We're good.
Second reading amendment number one to Senate Bill 92 has passed. Second reading amendment number two. Reading clerk, please read that amendment in.
Senate Bill 92, second reading amendment number two, page 2, lines 1 through 14.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that we withdraw that. Looking at that and talking to the good chairman of transportation, I may not have something quite right. I'm not convinced if I'm right or wrong yet, so this time I just withdraw that.
Without objection, that has been withdrawn. Second reading amendment number three. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
Senate file 92, second reading amendment number three, page 2, lines 1 through 14.
Senator Agar.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment number three to Senate file number 92 and ask your considerable vote. Or your fair vote. If we look in the amendment brought from the standing committee on Friday in Romanet little double I, at the very end it says fair event. And talking with individuals from the trucking industry, they were worried that terminology was a little broad and could encompass everything right down to the hot dog stand coming to the fair. So I in this amendment, I move to strike fair event and insert agricultural event to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish by giving those individuals that are going to cutting and dressage type events, Mr. President. With that, I ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion? We're voting on second reading amendment number three. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number three to Senate File 92 has passed. Senate File 92 having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objection. It is so ordered. Senate File 98, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 98, severance tax exemption.
We have some amendments. Second reading amendment number one. We have some amendments. Second reading amendment number one. Will the reading clerk please read that amendment in?
Senate file 98, second reading amendment number one, page 1, line 3.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number one to Senate file 98. Ask for the body's favorable consideration. Essentially, this is two things, Mr. President. The first is to put a sunset date in this. I think it's well and fine to prime the pump and try to front load some of our revenue. Give some incentives to get our oil production done and up and going. We've only had like 22 rigs here the last few years. Roughly somewhere around 450 wells have been drilled. But Mr. President, our neighbors around us have, I'd say, a much more Well, we're almost non-competitive in our taxing structure right now in comparison to what the rest of the states around us. They've got a lot more wells, a lot more rigs going in, and I think the notion of this bill is a good notion to have some relaxation in the times when those wells taper off. That goes to the second part of the amendment, where it's supposed to take place in the 25th month. I move it out to the 28th month. I think, Mr. President, there could be some advantages to that as far as the state, but the incentive still is available to the drillers, I think. But I don't think that moving it to the 28th month is going to make that much difference, and we'll be relatively certain that unless some games are played, we'll be down into that lower volume per day on barrels, and I think this gets it more akin to our stripper well incentives that we've had in the past, because if you compare these new horizontal wells, certainly the drop off after a couple of 3 years is comparative to our older wells in the stripper well. So that's hopefully, I think this makes it a better bill, and folks will be able to vote for it. So I ask you your consideration on this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would definitely support the amendment, but, Mr. President, I would caution facts offered in the discussion of the amendment said that we have a higher tax rate than other states. I don't think that's been conclusively shown. And when you consider income and other taxes that corporates face, I don't think we can say that. We need to study that, Mr. President, but we can't say that.
Okay, further discussion? Senator Perkins, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. I think it's a reasonable amendment on this at this time. That have a, particularly, I don't know whether the 4 months makes a difference or not. I suspect that it doesn't, and so I don't know if that hurts. But I think that having a sunset date on it is a reasonable opportunity, and I think it's one of the things that we ought to. Luckily, if you remember, we do have a study that's going forward. And we'll be able to get some more answers to this, and I think we'll have a little bit more discussion about some of those other issues on the next amendment. But I think this is a reasonable amendment, and we ought to vote it up and move it on. Thank you.
Further discussion? Voting on second reading amendment number one. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number one to Senate File 98 has passed. Second reading amendment number two. Reading clerk, please read that amendment in.
Senate File 98, second reading amendment number two. Page two after line 16.
Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number two to Senate File 98. Ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. President, this amendment does two things, and what it's targeting really is to ensure that the objectives of the bill itself are realized if we're going to give the full effect of the exemption. So there are two provisions you can see in Romanet 4 and Romanet 5. The first provision indicates that this exemption shall not exceed $100,000 for any well during the period of the exemption under paragraph Romanet 3 of this section. The concept there, and I have a handout that everybody has, which kind of explains the math behind it. But I basically just did the math on a typical well for 2 years of time under what would be normal production and price values, so 75 barrels per day averaged over that two-year period at $60 per barrel, which is better than they're getting right now, but not by too much. And then looking at 365 days for 2 years with a 3% exemption, that gets you $98,550 of total exemption, so I rounded off to $100,000. So the concept here is if the oil price goes up dramatically, we don't probably need to give an exemption under those circumstances to the excess. So the rest of that money, we'll get our 6% on. You'll still provide the exemption for that first $60 per barrel, but we'll make sure that we're kind of getting the value out of the cream on that well. And same thing with the production. If for some reason they have a highly productive well, typically the production begins for the first 2 years, you get up into the 400, 500 barrels perhaps per day if you've got a good well, and then it's going to tail off. And when I looked at the production curves for some similar shales averaged out based on the time frame. You'll typically enter that second year around 100 barrels per day and decay to around 50 barrels per day, so the 75 barrels per day. Well, if they have a highly productive well, or if they change their production curve by scaling it back somehow in the beginning, this protects against that also. So we've got some protection there to ensure that we're not going to end up with too much of an exemption for any one well. And then the second provision we see in Romanet 5, Mr. President, indicates that these exemptions will only apply to production from a number of wells that does not exceed the number of wells owned by that person that began production in Wyoming during the preceding two-year period, which is a little bit confusing, but the concept there is you only get this exemption if you keep drilling wells and putting them in production. So if today you have 100 wells that you're applying for this exemption for, you had better have drilled and started production over the last couple of years on 100 new wells. If you've only done 90 in the last 2 years, 90 new wells under production, you're only going to get credit for 90. Because the concept of this provision for the 3% exemption is that production is going to increase. That's the idea. We're expecting new production. If that doesn't happen, they don't deserve the full exemption, and this basically indicates that they won't get the full exemption under those circumstances. So if you keep drilling and maintain high production, you can maintain the exemption for the full set of wells that you have. I hope the body understands it. If not, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I'd call for the question and hope we adopt this amendment.
Thank you.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President, on and against the amendment. I've got a couple handouts that I think that it'd be wise to people for to look at. One of them is a typical five-year production curve for Niobrara and Turner Wells, and you'll see the production curve that we're talking about. It's a pie chart that I think it should be in, they came out in color, it should be in orange and blue, and it's going to show it's going to be your typical curve that you see, a rapidly descending curve, and it's got months 1 through 59, and I think that came out last week. But what you have is you have a well that starts out in years 1 through, particularly 1 through 23, 24. By then, you come down and starts to level out. But one of the things that this bill does is that it exempts there is no tax exemption at the first 2 years, which are the years of the highest years. And when you look at a lot of drillers, when they go out, they're looking for about a three-year or so payout. They're looking to recover all the costs that they have in the production of their well in about the first 3 years. And as you go and look at what a lot of other states have done, those exemptions are tied to a lot of times they're tied at the initial payout. You get the severance tax, or you get the reduction in the first other number of months, or until they achieve payout, and then you go back to the full tax. And so that's what a lot of other states are doing. This is a little bit different trip, where when the oil's flowing the most, they're still paying the full amount of tax. It's only when the production drops off in these subsequent years. And now with the last amendment, we've moved it out. It's not going to be at 24 months. It's going to start at 28 months. That it'll be then in for 2 years. We've got it sunsetted, and so we got to look at that. And I think that what we have to do is it has to be an incentive, or we might as well not do it. And the other thing I've provided for you is it's the executive summary, and a few extra pages out of a report called The Economic Assessment of Oil and Gas Tax Policy in Oklahoma. And it came out of what I believe is the LSO arm of the Oklahoma Chamber. And I have in there the executive summary that's provided for you. And it's got a couple of interesting points in here, Mr. Chairman, as they talk about their incentives. That if you look at what Oklahoma's done with their incentives, that at least in a 2012 global study of oil and gas markets, it was viewed as the best spot in North America for oil and gas, back in the best spot for oil and gas investment worldwide. And so they've done that. They also talk, if you look at down on under bullet point 2 of their executive summary, they have in bolded letters, a dramatic surge in drilling expenditures underlies the rebound in state oil and gas production. This is why Oklahoma tax policies cannot simply view the ongoing transition from conventional to unconventional drilling as a 1-for-1 swap in wells is more like a 4-for-1 swap based upon current spending patterns and production rates. Then it goes down and it lists actually the number of and tax incentives that they have. As they've gone back and looked at it, what they found is since they started doing these incentives, this is in the full report, which you can certainly find the full report online. They found that they've actually had a significantly higher production rate and a significantly higher, if you look at the 10 years since they did the assessments, since they did the incentive tax issues and before that, that they found a more consistent and a higher production and therefore a higher revenue to the state in what in how they've done that. They've got to be fair, Oklahoma has, if you go also back on the last couple pages, it shows how they're looking at their nearby states, and they're looking at Oklahoma's looking at the tax incentives from Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, Pennsylvania, and other places. They look at financial incentives, and one of the interesting things is Wyoming's not even on the radar. They talk in the report somewhere, they talk about North Dakota and some other states to do that, but they don't even talk about Wyoming as being competitive in that market. And I think it's one of the things that we ought to look at. I think as this goes forward, we'd be wise to look at, if you go back and look at what the incentives...
15 seconds.
Thank you. Go back and look at the other incentives, that there's a reason to do this. And I think that this amendment guts that. And I think if we're going to try this, it's a good experiment. And you just need to vote no on this if you think it's a good idea, if you wanted to have the incentive.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I'm going to ask that the amendment be divided, that line one applies to both parts, but so the divisions would be, each one would include line one, and then the two subparagraphs would be different, with the subparagraph IV being the first division and V being the second one.
Somehow I thought that might happen. That is divisible. Okay, we're going to divide it. The first division is lines 1 and 2 apply to both, but first division line 3 through 6. Okay, we're speaking that to division. Go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I will speak on and for this division. It makes a good deal of sense to me so that we do give the incentive. The incentive is larger than what they typically are getting out of one of these wells now, as I understand it, typical well. And this will prevent windfalls that don't add to the incentive. So I think this makes, Mr. President, this makes this bill a lot more palatable for me. I'd urge the Senate to adopt this division.
Okay, under discussion on Division 1. Senator Perkins?
On and against Division 1, if you look, it's about the average cost, at least looking at some of the data, the average cost to drill a well is runs somewhere between $3 to $4 million, and the total revenue that you get back from a well, if you get a good well, is about $15 million over the life of the well. So if you look at, if we're trying to create an incentive, when you're looking at $2 to $4 million in drilling costs, you know, I don't know how $100,000 creates that incentive. If you want these people to come and drill and to produce what's in the ground and to have the severance taxes come to our coffers and do that when other states have better environments for that, then if you want to keep it in the ground, then I think number one is a great amendment. If you want to see it produced and you want to try and have the revenues and the economic prosperity or the economic development and the jobs and both the private sector and the government rent revenues that come in from those, then I think that this is one that I don't think this moves the needle. And so voting for Division 1 will basically make this a gummer.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I contend that these incentives aren't that effective in increasing production. That's what our previous study's shown. I think this amendment, by limiting the ramifications of the incentives, is on track. It's a step in the right direction. And I ask the Senate to turn to the report that was referenced earlier. It's a January 2014 report. If you look at the very last paragraph, It says, second, the fact that respondents reported state tax incentives as generally less important than the price of oil and gas, geology operating costs, well location, reserves productions, and equipment availability come as little surprise, given the tax incentives affect a well cash flow only at the margin. Mr. President, that's perfectly is the reason why we shouldn't have this bill, but that this amendment by limiting it is a good thing. I also point, I had a handout about what happened in Oklahoma and their financial situation based on some of the incentives they gave. And I appreciate the time, Mr. President. Thank you.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Office, this is for your first time because this is the division. Go ahead.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate it. On and for division number one, and the concept here is really to try and find out what a reasonable amount of money is for a normal operation of a well, recognizing that if it exceeds this, everybody wins. I don't think there's going to be any oil producer that's going to be unhappy to see this limited at $100,000. If they hit this limit, it's because they're making a lot of money on that well, and that's a good well. So this is an aspiration point that would lead to success both for the state and for the producer. No one is going to have their feelings hurt if they hit $100,000. But the concern and one of the unintended consequences of the way the legislation is currently structured, Mr. President, that this addresses is the fact that as the operator, I can choose how to throttle production on my well. It's not a usual thing for me to throttle it. Typically, I'm going to have it wide open, and I'm going to utilize a normal production process. I'll stimulate the zone. I'll try and produce as much as I can early, and I'll get as much oil production on the front end as I possibly can. I don't have to, though. It's not difficult to throttle back the choke on the well and make sure that I shift more of the revenue into years 3 and 4. That's not rocket science, right? That's not even engineering. That's how to turn a valve 101. So this makes sure that nothing like that is incentivized. This makes sure that pretty much regardless of how we do the operation, we're providing a fair exemption and incentive based on reasonable oil prices and reasonable production curves. And again, if we exceed that and they exceed it, I'm pretty confident everyone's going to be happy. I hope the body will support division number one.
Question. Senator Perkins.
Thank you for my second time. I think when you look at that, it's important that if you read the report, you have to read it carefully. I put a couple of things in there, but I'd encourage you to dig this up and look at least some of the relevant parts in depth. But just going back and looking at what they did, there are two things. This is on the last page, I think, of the little handout I gave you. And the question that that they were trying to answer was, do financial incentives matter to the oil and gas industry? And they look at two. If you go down to the middle, there it says two aspects of the survey deserve focus. And they talk about, they look at the people who had applied, and they talk about the rebates and how that was starting out and how it started out really quite slowly, which was important because they were moving from horizontal wells. They were moving from vertical wells to horizontal wells. And in fact, if you go back and there's a In the full report, they actually talk about the University of Wyoming study that my good friend from Lander refers to, where it talks about that incentives didn't make a difference in that. And this is the important part. This is the difference. This is what the tallest senator from Fremont County said the other day, and that is that it's changed. That it used to be in 2002 when you went to look at those reports, it looked at vertical wells and it mattered on reserves and geology. That's what drove it, and that's why incentives had almost no influence back then, is because they were doing vertical wells. They wanted to do it in geology, and they knew that, so it had to do with where proven reserves were. Horizontal wells have, and the new conventional, these are all unconventional wells these days, has changed the dynamic. It's not a question if you hit oil. It's a question of will the well be economical. You'll find the oil. The question is, will it flow appropriately? And that's the difference. So two things happen. One is the production curve in horizontal wells are steeper, as indicated by the one we found out. But two, that no longer relies on geology and supplies because you know where it is. So the dynamic, this is what the tallest senator from Fremont County was saying the other day, it's changed. And so do the incentives work? And I think if you look at the next sentence, after where my the shorter senator from Fremont County stopped reading, the next sentence says, he's pretty, the problem is the tall senator is getting shorter, so you're catching up, I think.
Now that we're totally confused, go ahead, Senator Perkins.
The guy who likes oil versus the guy who was purporting to keep it in the ground. Says this, again, what is surprising from the survey is that the incentives were reported as the least important factor by 9 of the 23 respondents. So said another way is, only 9 said it was the least important. That tells you that there are 14 out of the responses said it is a factor. And that's exactly, when you read the full report, that's exactly where it comes out. It turns out that at least the LSO group or equivalent there found that it made a difference. And in fact, they attribute that some of the rebound and some of the consistency they've had in their oil and gas production and the severance taxes that come to it, as well as the overlapping and positive effects had on Oklahoma's economy, have been for the good, not for the worse. I ask you to vote no.
Senator Anselmi Dalton.
Honored for Division 1, Mr. President, excuse me. Honored for Division 1.
Go ahead.
We're still going to offer the incentives, so it's kind of a red herring to act like we're not going to offer when we look at that study. The difference is we're just going to cap the amount of the incentive if the well is very productive. So I think there's a difference to be noted, and that's why Division 1 works.
Okay, further discussion. We're voting on Division 1 of Second Reading Amendment Number 2, that being Lines 1 and 2 are inclusive, but Lines 3 through 6. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment has failed.
Division.
Division being called for. All in favor, please stand. Opposed, there's 12 opposed. Please stand. Should be 17-12, like I said, that amendment has failed. That portion of the amendment has failed, Division 1. We're on Division 2. Anyone wish to speak to Division 2? Senator Ross, let's go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Hopefully the body will treat this one a little bit more favorably. It's not a cap. It just basically says that if you don't keep drilling and improve production or at least maintain it at its current level, that you're not going to be able to benefit from this exemption. If the whole reason for this exemption is the idea that it's going to lead to more drilling in the state, it should prove itself out. Otherwise, they shouldn't be receiving the full exemption. Hopefully this makes sense. On and for Division 2.
Senator Meyer.
In generally in favor of what the sponsor said, but I'm not sure if the language says what the sponsor means, because it says on line 8 that does not exceed the number of wells owned by that person that began production in Wyoming during the preceding 2 years. So I guess in the scenario that I'm thinking about is that during the preceding 2 years, the person drilling wells the producing wells had, say, 100 wells. And the production only applies to wells that do not exceed 100 wells. So if he drilled 150 wells and he ended up with 250 wells, then the last 50 wells would not necessarily have production that would be counted toward the incentive, but just the first 99 wells would actually be counted toward the percentage of the wells that were drilled. So I think, you know, I'm generally in support of this. I'm certainly going to vote for it, but I think that we need to look at the language and see what it actually does, what the sponsor says it's going to do.
Senator Perkins.
This on and against the amendment. I think, again, it's an incentive. I think this reduces the incentive. And the other thing is we've now sunset this. So you know, is it that, you know, by the time we get down this, the sun sets in 2025, and so we get this, now we're 4 years out, that puts you in 2021. We're only, so far as this goes, we're only, like I say, it's already time limited, so I think this is the only thing, like I say, if it's, like we said before, if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing, and I think this just overdoes it. But ask you to vote no.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 2, division 2, being lines 7 through 10. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no?
No.
That division number 2, has failed. Okay, Senate File 98. There aren't any other amendments? Yeah, Senate File 90, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a 3rd time? There's no objection. It is so ordered. Senate File 102, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 102, National Teaching Certification.
Senate File 102, having read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a 3rd time? Here, no objections. So ordered. Senate File 105, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 105, Drug Donation Program Act Expansion.
Okay, we do have an amendment. Reading clerk, please read in that amendment.
Senate File 105, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 16.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, I bring you second reading amendment 1 to Senate File 105 and ask for your favorable consideration. All this does, members of the Senate, is add Medicaid eligible into the language. That's the intent of the program. For the eligibility, and it was just making sure that it was clear that this is for Medicaid-eligible individuals. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion? We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 105. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Scott, how could I miss you?
Mr. President, because I almost missed the amendment. Mr. President, it seems to me that there's a number, if this is trying to limit these drug donations to Medicaid eligible, I think we're missing a good part of the world that needs them. And people that are poor that for one reason or another aren't categorically eligible for Medicaid, I think this, if this amendment does what I think it does, it restricts the benefits this just. And maybe I've misunderstood what it does, but I don't want to restrict the benefits to people who are, so that people who are not Medicaid eligible can't get some of them, because it could be quite important for them.
Anybody else before the sponsor speaks for a second time? Senator Hicks.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, along those lines, it seems to me as we may actually have available drugs that could be distributed to the population, but if they're not Medicaid eligible, they wouldn't get them. So those drugs would effectively expire, and we'd have to just get rid of them.
Okay, anybody else for their first time? Senator Hastert, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President, members. And this section of the bill, this is only covering the bill covers those that the program will assist in getting manufacturer donations. Like, I think that is what the amendment is geared towards, and what the bill is geared towards is those that are eligible or those that could seek donations from the manufacturer. This is just saying that, and that part of the program is limited into the those that are Medicaid eligible, Mr. President. And that was all that it was trying to do, is just show that this is, in this section, this is the language for those individuals.
Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 105. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no?
No.
Amendment has failed.
Division.
A division being called for. All in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand.
There was a lot of good
Okay, that amendment has failed. 17 no's, 11 ayes. Senate File 105, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Hearing no objections. So ordered. Senate File 117, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 117, School Finance Amendments 3.
Okay, we got some amendments. Second reading number one. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
Senate File 117, second reading amendment number one, page one, line six.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment number one to Senate File 117 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. It looks somewhat complicated, but it is really not. If I would refer to my fellow senators to the sheets that I handed out, there are three of them. I've numbered them at the top. The first one is Senate File 117 as introduced, and it shows where that was what the bill looked like before the amendments and the reductions to these proposed reductions to our funding education model. Page two, then you'll see the striking of the co-located schools and the $10 million appropriation for the hardship. That was also removed, so those two columns were removed. If you look across the top, I can explain some of those categories. We have the guaranteed under the current law what these schools receive. Then we have the model ADM, which is one of the segments of the Senate file. The class size, which is another segment, groundskeeper, the student assessment repeal, and then this interaction differences is actually a column that explains the interaction between the different categories as they play out as we delete some categories and those type of things. So that's what that number is, and it's just the funding formula is somewhat complicated, but that's what that category represents. The total estimated impact, and then the percentage. And I'd like the body, Mr. President, to look at those percentages. This is we have a couple of outliers that concerned us as we worked through this process and provided some of these amendments. And some of them, most of them were in aspect to the smaller schools, specifically the 1A size type that fell under that 243 ADM, which we refer to as the cliff. And it's very evident as in one of those schools about a quarter of the way down, you can see that high percentage of almost 9.3% reduction. And so we've tried to address that. I think we've come up with a pretty good solution in one of our amendments that we're going to propose. But those were the concerns that we had with our smaller schools as we walked through this. The final page, Mr. President, is what we're proposing with this particular amendment, the second reading amendment number one. We've taken out the health insurance, and we've taken out the retirement segments completely because we didn't have accurate numbers. We didn't even have estimates of how that would affect our individual districts. Each district is different. We're still requiring the reports on cash reserves, but we took out the wording in regard to cash reserves and other savings accounts that our districts have accumulated over the years. The wording was such that we could actually go in and recapture anything above and beyond the pre-97 amounts and the 15% amounts by statute that they could keep. Anything above that, we had wording in there that would allow us to go in and recapture anything in excess of those two categories. So we've removed that wording, protecting what they have presently in cash reserves in any of those specific accounts. Honestly, Mr. President, we didn't feel it was fair to change the game midstream, and some of our districts out there have been saving up for years for some type of a project, and it just didn't seem right to go in and grab that up. But here's the important thing. The report is still being requested, and I'm hopeful that maybe we can take that report as an interim topic for one of our committees to look at cash reserves and looking at the discrepancies and the somewhat unfairness of the scale of the economy between smaller and schools and larger schools, and try to address that some way to alleviate our smaller schools and be trying to meet the needs of our basket of goods and the curriculum that we expect our schools to offer. The other thing that we added in this second reading amendment, Mr. President, if you turn the page on this amendment, Section 4 was an addition. Section 4 was trying to address the small school ADM. Thank you, Mr. President. The ADM drop-off. And so we had it as a 95%, which basically creates a new floor of 5%. The most a school would suffer is 5% reduction. So that will help those smaller schools. Other than that, that's the amendment, and I'd ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Further discussion? Okay, there being none. We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 117. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Second reading amendment number 2. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
Senate File 117, second reading amendment number 2, page 13, line 7.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would withdraw this second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 117 at this time.
Without objection, that has been withdrawn. Second reading amendment number 3, will the reading clerk please read that one in?
Senate File 117, second reading amendment number 3, page 22, after line 15.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 117. This is a fairly simple amendment. You saw in the very first one we had where we are requiring a report back from the districts on their reserves because the exact impact of those is unknown to us. What this one does is says also report back to us on what your retirement program is, how many are actually on the retirement versus ghost employees, what percentage of the retirement you're paying, and likewise on health care, how many are actually on the plan, how many are on a spouse's plan, the deductible amounts, the variety of plans. The objective is to remove in that column we saw indeterminate where we really didn't know the impact of looking at these elements of the model. So it will help us to make more informed decisions in the future. The lack of this data is why sometimes you get emails from the district where they say their cut is going to be X and it doesn't line up with what we have, and we're going to quantify what X is through this amendment, finding out what those unknown costs are. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm for this amendment. It's a good amendment. It's one that's needed. Again, this would be a very important interim topic for one of our committees to take up and to get a true picture of what exists out there and come up with some good public involvement. Our professional educators should be involved in the discussion, and once we have a true picture, we ought to address our insurance concerns with our schools and as well as the retirement and get a handle on that once and for all. And if we find out that we can't save on insurance, as our schools are claiming, then we ought to discover that and put that off to the side and not talk about it for a while. So it's a good amendment, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 117. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Okay, Senator Land, would you come up here? Second reading amendment number 4. Would the reading clerk please read that in?
Senate File 117, second reading amendment number 4, corrected copy, page 20, lines 1 through 20.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 117. This is a follow-on to the first amendment by my friend from Cali, where the hold harmless was pegged at 95%, and subsequent calculations by LSO revealed that that was going to be insufficient to try and smooth out so that we didn't have some of these small districts having 6, 7, 8% cuts. So this changes it to 97.5 so that nobody takes more than a 2.5% cut, and I would commend this to the body's favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 117. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Senate File 117, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Here, no objections. So ordered. Senate File 121, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 121, state-funded capital construction.
Okay, we have several amendments. Second reading amendment number one. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
Senate File 121, second reading amendment number one, page one, line 10.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, thank you. I would like to withdraw this amendment at this time. Thank you.
Without objection, that amendment has been withdrawn. Second reading amendment number two. Reading clerk, please read that amendment in.
Senate File 121, second reading amendment number two, page 17, line 12.
Senator Dockstader.
I move second reading amendment number two to Senate File 121. Folks, this is essentially what we do. We just step in and reduce the budget there. We move it from $100 million back to $60 million, make it a 60-40 match. Yeah, with the university coming up with the 40, I'd ask for your approval.
Okay, further discussion? Further discussion? Okay, Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against the amendment. Mr. President, as we get into the reserve fund specifically, and of course this is on the science initiative, which didn't come up in the discussion, it's moving $40 million, which seems like it would be worth a little bit of debate and discussion. But the reserve funds were from a sweep, and it's not new money at the university. I hope everybody realizes that. This is money that was out distributed among the departments and the colleges. It had been on the budget. It had been disclosed for years. It was part of the audit, and everyone knew the money was there. For honestly, decades to some degree. When you look at the amount of money that was swept, it totals $138 million right now. We know that some of that money will actually be returned out to departments. There were sweeps that took place, for example, relating to WAMI and the health care, which probably is not appropriate. There are other sweeps that came in that need to be returned back to the departments. We don't know how much that money is going to be. But, Mr. President, what we do know is that for our school districts, we encourage them to have a reserve account somewhere between 10 and 15%. That's the standard for the schools around the state. As a legislature, we have a reserve account much greater than that. The Legislative Stabilization Reserve account and the other accounts that we have are significantly larger than that 15%. The reserves that were swept at the university, remember, it's around a $900 million per year institution, or excuse me, per biennium institution, corresponds to around a 13-14% reserve with respect to the biennial budget, which is not unheard of or unreasonable, or honestly, even a practice to be discouraged, because I don't think this body wants the university to come down to Cheyenne every time it needs a million-dollar parking lot or to finish off the construction on a building that we've already potentially approved an appropriation for, but more funds are needed, pave a sidewalk, or any of the other things that get done at the university. The funds for those types of projects come out of the reserves, and I think everybody has seen a breakdown on how these reserves look, Mr. President, where a portion of them are for special projects, and we have upcoming special projects. We've got an education project that's on the horizon at some point. We've got athletics projects that are on the horizon. We know that there are always future projects and always future initiatives that are underway that are going to need planning funds, seed funds, and everything else that goes into those projects, as well as the necessary dollars to finish it up. A long-term strategic reserve of $50 million, and then a lot of the rest of those funds are already earmarked for things like the research plan at the university and other programs. So the idea that we would just say, hey, university, you've got a large amount of money sitting in a pot, and so we're going to take $40 million of it, even though we already appropriated $100 million, for the science initiative, and we're going to force you to use those funds on the science initiative instead. That deappropriation is going to end up hurting our university, and it's our university. It's everybody in this room's university. We're all leading brown and gold in this room. And we know the implications of that. So I hope the body will resist this amendment. I hope the body will realize that what we're doing at the university, particularly with the science initiative, is a good thing that we support. The university has not been mismanaging its resources. The university cut 340 positions over the last couple of years and has truly paid its dues. When asked to cut, the university cut deeply. We also ask the university, learn where your money is. Do a better job managing your resources. It's too difficult to see what's going on. The university stepped up, put together a financial administrative system, took the resources in so that we could look at them all at once, and sure enough, the moment we saw those funds, we're trying to take them. What a reward for an institution that actually did the hard work we asked it
to do. 15 seconds.
We're going to penalize them $40 million and send them on their way.
Oh, it is?
That's not the right way to do it, Mr. President. I hope the body will resist this amendment.
Senator Rothfuss, I apologize. We had the rule changed, so you can continue if you'd like.
Mr. President, I thought that was a pretty eloquent summary there right at the end, though. If I go on, it's just going to be anticlimactic.
If you're comfortable with it, then I'll just sit down. No, I didn't want to shut you off. Okay.
No worries. Thanks, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Okay. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, maybe I'm looking at this all wrong and confused, and I'll get promptly corrected. But it seems to me, Mr. President, we're going into some real financial hard times. Recall to the Senate that the introduction of the budget was the deficit this biennium was going to be $902 billion. Now, we've done some things to try to deal with that in the budget bill, but we really haven't gotten the job done. We're still going to run out of money, even if we were to prevail entirely on what we do, Mr. President, in the budget, even if we prevail entirely, we're running out of our reserves faster than our tax revenues are recovering or are likely to recover. So we have a major problem. The science initiative is something I think most of us want to do. I think it will help the university immensely. And so, Mr. President, what it seems to me this amendment is doing, and maybe I've misunderstood it, is say, okay, we can afford $60 million here. If you can come up with the other 40, whether it be from reserves, whether it be from some fundraising, or more likely some combination, then go ahead and let's build it. Mr. President, what am I missing here? It does seem to me like a sensible use of the reserves. If they hadn't found them, we'd have much greater problems in this area.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Dockstader. Before you speak for your second time, no, we've got a limited discussion. Go ahead, Senator Dockstader, get up.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I heard in that eloquent debate there that we were dealing with schools, and yes, we are. We're trying to handle our education all the way up from all the way from the beginning at kindergarten all the way up to our university. And it's a difficult task. What we're saying here is with this project, and I heard the word project out there, we have countless projects over the university year in and year out. What we're saying with this project, just step back, give it a little breather, give it a little savings. It's all about trying to target in on that $902 million, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Dockstader. Senator Meyer, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I guess I got a little bit of heartburn
going into the university's budget, is I think that they've done a really good job, and they've done some things that we haven't been able to do. They had a 12% cut in their employees over there, and we're down to about maybe a 4 to 4.5% cut in the last couple of years. We'd have to cut another 600 or 700 state employees to catch up on a percentage basis in our state budget. But so now we're reaching in and I think we're almost penalizing their good job because they've saved some money. And they've done it straight up. They haven't hired these folks back, and that's made a lot of difference. And they've reached in and they found every coffee pot they possibly could and did an audit and found some money. And, Mr. President, I think that we've got quite a little bit of money set aside for this particular project. From my perspective, $60 million is probably, it's a nice start, but it doesn't, I guess it's, to me it just doesn't feel right to just give them the $60 million. I agree with the good senator from Natrona County that we've got some budget problems, but there are some priorities. This happens to be one of mine, and so for that reason, Mr. President, I can't support it.
Okay, further discussion, we're voting on second reading. Okay, Senator Offutt, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I certainly do appreciate the debate and the concern, but at the end of it all, it is a deappropriation. This money was previously appropriated for this project, and we recognize that there are funds available that we can try and appropriate into. But those funds, the $138 million, it's not all state funds, right? There's tuition in there. There's research dollars. There's other funds commingled with that. So rather than trying to directly reach in there, we'll just take back $40 million that we've already appropriated but haven't authorized in the past. And just to clarify, Mr. President, you know, going into what the funds are and see which one of these aspects the body objects to. The first is a risk pool of $5 million. That's basically the equivalent of A&I's risk pool. We have that pool available within the trustees to ensure that if we have any unexpected expenditure requirements from a risk standpoint, we can look there. We've earmarked $1 million for the passenger plane reserve. That was actually something that we've been directed to look into the university. So this is in response to Joint Appropriations Committee saying, hey, you need to start planning for this in the future. Well, the university was responsible, stepped up and did that. General Operations Reserve, that's $50 million. That is, again, 10% of the annual expenditures for the university, a very responsible reserve, which is consistent with what we recommend for school districts, cities, towns, and counties, your business, my business, the state, anyone else. A 10% reserve is a reasonable reserve. That's the only place, incidentally, that I can imagine taking $40 million from. So we'll take that from 10% to 2% if we take it. We've got a capital construction reserve of $20 million. Perhaps it could come from there, but we already have projected plans for residence life and dining and other areas where we don't want to take state funds, so we're trying to utilize these capital construction reserve dollars for these other projects that are underway. We're setting aside $14 million for the residence hall construction reserve. Everybody in here has been involved in some conversation about the need to upgrade the residence halls at the University of Wyoming. All of us have. We all know that has to be done. Here's the first $14 million towards that. Student recruiting reserve. We set up an endowment of $10 million. The money from that is going to go towards student recruitment to a large degree because this chamber and the other chamber have said increase the number of students that attend the University of Wyoming. That was listened to. It was taken seriously. And ongoing recruiting measures are being taken based on the funds that are available that we have set aside. And then finally, the special projects reserve, which is currently at 37.7. This is where the funds that will probably be returned back to departments will come from. It's unknown how much money is actually in that fund at this time. But the special projects reserve, that's where we'll try and move forward with things like the next education initiative. So, Mr. President, I do understand the need to find some easy money. All of our revenue discussions failed. All of the bills associated are dead. And now we're just looking around for jars of money that we can take money from to make up for the fact that we did not solve any of our problems. But these are funds that will hurt the students at the university in the long run. This is, again, as I mentioned before, our university. If we take these funds, all of your constituents will suffer from the ramifications of that. The university has already made substantial cuts. This is something we should resist, and I hope the body will choose to resist taking $40 million out of Wyoming, University of Wyoming's reserves, because we couldn't come up with the money somewhere else. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Dockstader.
Mr. President, let's wrap it up. I don't doubt the work of the university at all, Mr. President. We're just simply asking that we throttle back a little bit, take a little breath here. We're moving forward every year over at the university. I think if we're looking at this, if you're looking at this amendment specifically, I would submit to you this is a responsible approach to growth at the university. We're not canceling anything. We're just bringing it back around so we approach it in a responsible way. I'd ask for your support for the amendment.
Further discussion. Okay, Senator Meyer.
Just a clarification, Mr. President. I think this body was responsible last year in passing their early retirement bill through. It died in the other body. Early retirement is what the university used to basically reduce their reduction in force. And we did everything we had to do on this side of the hall. But I just wanted to make that clear that I thought that we acted responsibly over here in the Senate.
Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 121. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Okay, that amendment is passed. Division being called for. All in favor, please stand. Okay, opposed? Okay, 16-13, that amendment has passed.
Surprise.
Senator Scott.
Parliamentary inquiry, why wasn't that a roll call under our rules?
Because the roll call, I thought, was my interpretation, was for budget. Well, we're not going to argue about it. I think we can go back. If the body wants to do a roll call vote, we can go do that. My interpretation was that it's not a budget bill. A budget bill, two-thirds vote is different. What's the pleasure of the Senate? Do you want to? Okay. The chair will make a determination. We shall have a roll call vote. It did fail 16-13. Chief Clerk, please call the roll, and we'll go with the roll call vote. It passed with 16-13. We'll call roll call vote, please. And from now on, the rest of these amendments in Senate File 121 will have a roll call vote, and that'll eliminate that. Go ahead, Chief Clerk, please call the roll. We're voting on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 121.
Agar?
Aye.
Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
No.
No. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
No.
Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 18 aye, 12 no.
Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 121 has passed. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 121 has passed. Now we're on second reading amendment number 3. Reading clerk, please read. Senator Scott, go ahead.
Mr. President, just so we're clear in the future, Rule 11.3, except as provided by Rule 6-5A, which relates to Committee of the Whole, the ayes and noes shall be taken on the motion to adopt any amendment which directly increases or decreases an appropriation by a specific dollar amount. It isn't limited to the appropriation bill. It's in any bill.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Thanks for reminding me. We will do that in the future. I hope we've done it in the past. I think we have. Okay, now we're on second reading amendment number 3. Reading clerk, please read that in.
Senate File 121, second reading amendment number 3, corrected copy, page 1, line 10.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, thank you. I would move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 121. Fellow senators, down in Committee 2, we had a long conversation about this bill, and I would take you to page 48 of the draft bill that was provided, hopefully in your box. Page 48 references a task force that was suggested on the University of Wyoming housing project, which has already been alluded to this afternoon. We elected as a Senate Appropriations Committee during that committee meeting to strip that language out. After visiting with the members of that committee over the course of the next 2 or 3 days and giving it quite a bit of thought, I'm bringing this back for your consideration here on the floor, fellow senators. This is a project that will amount to the spending of upwards of $300 million over the next few years. And the more I thought about it, Mr. President, the more I thought, maybe this is not such a bad idea for us to be involved in this. At first, we thought we've got plenty of professionals over there who do this for a living. I think they can join us in the effort, but I don't think it hurts at all for our legislature to be involved with it. This is a big project that is getting ready to commence, and so that's why I bring it back for your consideration after quite a bit of conversation with fellow members of the Appropriations Committee. So I urge your support.
Mr. Vice President, would you come up here for a second, please?
Mr. President?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice President. Member of the Senate, I would speak on in favor of this amendment, but it's early in the process, and the reason I do that is we heard a lot of good discussion a little bit ago about being involved, if we do a block grant and be involved in how the university runs its program, runs the system, decisions are made by an appointed board. I've got a lot of confidence in that board. You know, let's go ahead and pass this amendment. Let's have further discussion about it. But I do know the board is working on this particular issue, and I think maybe my colleague from the White Eye Retire could jump up and speak to it, but I think they've already put together a board that they're working on to have legislative involvement. We need to be involved in it. It's a big decision. There's no reason that the legislature shouldn't be involved in it. So let's vote for this amendment. Let's put it back in. But further down the road here, before this session is over, we might want to talk about how we address this. I know they're taking some steps to do it internally.
Further discussion, Senator Raffes.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. So as far as this process is concerned, this has been ongoing. We've commissioned a number of studies over the last couple of years, at least 2 full studies regarding what we should do moving forward with housing. There's been a lot of discussion about things like public-private partnerships, what the revenue will look like. And just to clarify, while the entire project is on the order of $300 million, there's no intention of doing all of that at once, first of all. And second of all, this is a revenue-earning entity. So it's not a $300 million appropriation. I don't want anyone to think that. The university will need $300 million to replace its residence halls, but intends to pay for those $300 million worth of residence halls through revenue associated with the housing and the basically the room and board aspect of the university. So there isn't a $300 million appropriation ask coming next year. There is discussion about how to finance that potentially with some state investment. So we would provide interest payments on that investment if it came from the state or, as I mentioned, public-private partnerships. And again, there's a lot of planning ahead on this, but there have been a couple of studies presented. If anybody's interested in those studies, they're public documents that are easily available, and we can get you a copy of those as you see fit. As far as the involvement of legislators and task forces, every building that has been worked on at the university in probably the past 7 or 8 years has had a steering committee which has included at least one legislator. I think I've been on three of those. Some of our former senator colleagues that are from that area and others have been involved in those. And it also includes trustees. So we bring in trustees, we bring in legislators, we bring in members of the university, we bring in faculty members, we bring in the public, and we try and put together an overall strategy group that can dig in on what the needs are for that building. Typically, we'll end up going around like we did with the Capitol and visit other facilities to understand what best practices are and then work together on the design in a collaborative manner. So there is a lot of coordination, and there's been coordination with the legislature and all of that. So that's something that the university certainly welcomes. I don't know if this prescriptive vehicle is the answer. I don't know that it's necessarily bad either. But I do know that regardless of whether this passes or not, we'll end up having legislators involved in the process, and there'll be a lot of outreach, Mr. President.
Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 121. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Okay, that amendment has passed. Senator Scott and Senator Coe, would you come up here, please, for a second?
Money in it.
Second reading amendment number 4. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
Senate File 121, second reading amendment number 4, page 1, lines 4 and 5.
Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senators, I move for second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 121 and ask for your favorable consideration. I think, as many of you know, I've had an opportunity to discuss this particular issue with you so far. What this amendment does is to restore the language concerning loans for capital construction relating to student dormitories across the state, as was originally included in the bill. And so if you look at the Standing Committee Amendment, what it does is really restore that particular language. The reason why this amendment is so important is because our community colleges across the state are having a difficult time finding the necessary funding in order to make these dormitory projects pencil. Their local bonding rates are not low enough to make the projects pencil, and so this provides an important tool for them to continue that growth. I'm aware that all of the presidents at all of the colleges are in support of this particular amendment, and there are plans to potentially utilize this resource for Fremont County, Laramie County, Sweetwater County, Campbell County, and in Powell. So those are the immediate needs. What's really important for the body to recognize and understand is that these are limited to dormitories, and why that matters as it relates to community colleges is that doesn't add to our major maintenance costs, because once those dorms, once they're constructed, become part of the college's additional operational costs. So the college is responsible for maintaining those after they're built. So I think that's important to know. They're considered auxiliaries, and so they're not something that the state needs to continue to take on. And so that's very important to understand. Again, this is a loan at a rate of 2.5% for a 25-year loan based on the Permanent Mental Trust Fund. It is capped at $60 million for all of the colleges to avail themselves of this tool. It does not appropriate that amount of money. It simply allows them the opportunity to go through the process. And so if you look at the original bill on pages 2 through 9, it really outlines the process for which they have to go through which the determinations have to be made to make sure that these projects are viable and they're in the state's interest and in these communities' interest. And I think that's important. To go to the good senator from Sheridan County regarding the 2.5 interest rate, that's found on page 8, line 5. That particular language would be restored. For that, I'd stand for questions, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration of this very important amendment for the continued growth of our communities, to support the Endow Initiative, and to support technical education in this state, but providing the necessary housing needs as our community colleges need.
Further discussion, Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I rise to not in opposition or for this amendment, but just to inform the body that Casper College has built all their buildings with private money. There's one building on the campus that was built with state money, and that's the University of Wyoming building that's on the campus. The others have all been donated by statewide people, and we intend on continuing that if we can. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Hicks.
Yeah, just a question for the sponsor of this. With that 2.5% interest rate, it seems like the PMF has generated quite a bit higher rate of returns than the 2.5%. So if you do the math and you project the $60 million out for 25 years, that would be the worst-case scenario. What's the real hit on the PMF due to the lost rate of returns? Has there been any analysis along those lines?
Before you speak for your second time, let's continue. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President.
No, wait a minute. This is one of the ones we can limit on debate. Yeah. Go ahead, Senator Von Flader.
The opportunity cost is what we're really talking about, and it's based on a tenth of 1% times the number of years. So you could take a 10-year loan out and get the 1% of it, 1% on your interest rate. But, you know, once again, Gillette has built all their own dorms with city bonding, and I don't understand why we couldn't bond these dorms the same rate, because they're supposed to make their own money back and make their own payments. So the opportunity lost to the Permanent Trust Fund of $60 million or a share of it would be quite a bit.
Okay, Senator Alcott, go ahead. You can jump up if you want. Go ahead, Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. President. That is the issue that's before the body, is the interest rate that could be earned on the trust fund versus putting that money out for loan. And so that's a question for the body. It's also a question for the decision makers of whether or not to make that loan. And so it's a question of whether or not to invest back into our communities based on a need, or to just earn the interest into that savings. And so that is a question. I think it's a fair question. There is a cap on it. The loan doesn't have to be made. Those questions can be answered. Whether or not those calculations were made over the long-term hits, possibly based on those particular loans, is a wonderful question for JAC, who originally presented the option in the bill, and they may have more insight into that particular question.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, thank you. Just a question. I'm not familiar with the history of LCCC. When it comes to bond issues, general obligation bond issues, I know up at the college up in my county, we have either built the buildings with private money or general obligation bonds. Can you give me the history of LCCC, and did you consider general obligation bonds when you were talking about this project?
Senator Meyer, I believe you wanted to jump up.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I think it's important that we do things with our dormitories. I can tell you we're Goshen County, we're in the few counties that actually had quite a little bit of funds that came in from the state when we had a problem with black mold years ago, and availed ourselves to the state and their generosity in a fairly large way, in a substantial way. But we've also had projects where we were required to bond. But I think that something that we might be able to do with the community colleges is something that we've done with the university, and that is to use the PMTF not to loan money, but to guarantee, to backstop the bonds. And when you do that, you get the full faith and credit of the state. The interest rates go way down. You still have some restrictions as far as how state treasurer can invest in the PMTF. But they're not as restrictive as actually going out with a legislative designated investment and buying the bonds. So I think that might be something that might, if their bonding authority and capacity exists in these areas, might be something that we could probably set up on on third reading is that option.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd like the suggestion that the senator from LaGrange makes. However, that's not what this amendment does. This amendment is an actual loan from the PMTF. And not only is it going to cause a reduction in the interest rate and so forth, but it also gets rid of any opportunity for capital gains from that $60 million, too. One of the interesting things we got in testimony when we were discussing this particular portion of the bill was that if you look at 16-1-109, there's a JPA loan program that just fits right into this under the Joint Powers Act. And it's there's $52.6 million in this account, but the interest rate is 4.96%, which may be a little high, but I think that might be something that the legislature could look into if we wanted to lower that interest rate. But that's what this was set up for and, frankly, has not really been accessed much rather than constantly going to the PMTF.
Senator Scott?
Mr. President, on the opportunity cost here, assuming the full $60 million is loaned out, it then for every 1% that the PMTF earns, it's higher than the 2.5% interest rate. You're talking about $600,000 a year. If you thought that, well, 5% would be a yield that we could get counting both the interest and dividend earnings and the capital gains, you're talking about $1.5 million a year. If you think that the PMTF can earn 7.5% or 5 percentage points higher, it's $3 million a year. So that, and this is every year from now on, including some years in the immediate future, where we're going to have some pretty tough times, Mr. President. We're going to be looking for everything we can find.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, one other question, and maybe somebody on appropriations can help me, but I think if we set this up and we say $60 million, that automatically goes into a restricted fund and what the state treasurer can actually invest those funds in. So we have to set that aside because that becomes a dedicated set of funds in case somebody did actually come in and do that. So that reduces the opportunity to invest in higher level rate of return, long-term investments. So it actually restricts a total $60 million to a lower level of return, even if it's never borrowed.
Further discussion. Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. President. Based on my understanding, to answer the good senator who sits behind me, to answer the questions about the history of Laramie County Community Colleges, I'm not aware of them ever historically requesting money from the state in this capacity, but I believe the knowledge and memories in this room may go beyond my understanding as well. Perhaps we can look to the UW reserve accounts for funding here. I am interested to hear about the senator behind me, any solutions he may have. But again, senators, the purpose of this bill or the purpose of this amendment, the reason why this is being brought forward, because the community colleges across the state are struggling with finding funding, and they support this amendment. And so despite their histories of being able to fund projects due to the increasing cost of construction, of which the state is well aware of, and thus we're looking at addressing and severely reducing our capital construction costs, they are faced with those same challenges. And this presents a powerful tool for them to continue to grow our economies and grow our dormitories so that we're attracting students to this state. And so I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion. Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 121. We're going to do a roll call vote.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen? No. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter? No. Driscoll? No. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 12 aye, 18 no.
Second reading amendment number 4 has failed to pass. Second reading amendment number 5. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
Senate file 121, second reading amendment number 5. Corrected copy, page 48, lines 11 through 23.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 5 to Senate file 121 and ask for favorable consideration. Mr. President, what this bill does, the first portion of it does the same thing that second reading amendment number 3 did. So where it's different, and I think this is fairly important, is from line 9 on. In the original bill where the task force was set up, it was actually quite punitive against the university. It did not allow them to do anything with any of their property anywhere. So what this does is it deletes and adds that is only for residence halls, apartments, and so it only has to do with housing. So that's what the moratorium would then attach to, and it wouldn't tie the university's hands elsewhere on campus.
Further discussion? Question being called for. We're voting on second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 121. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Second reading amendment number 6. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
121, second reading amendment number 6, page 14, line 5.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 6 to Senate file 112 and ask the body to vote aye. What this does is really, if you go to page 14, what it does is it does not change the amount of money. It simply flips the amount of money. There's been some discussion. I think we have everybody at the college and the parties involved in this to all on the same page. And so what this does is it just flips, so it doesn't change the amount of money. All the money in both projects still goes to Casper College, and it just simply flips those, which we now have agreement between our foundation board, our ag college, and our board of trustees that they would like this done, and this is how they'd like this money to come forward so it can be used by the college for their purposes. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Burns?
Mr. President, I wish I could understand this a little better. I see there's a bit more of a flip. There's about a $3.5 million increase from what I look at, from what I see. Page 14, line 5. Oh, I see.
Senator Burns.
Oh, I see, Mr. President. I'm a little slower, but I'll get there.
Further discussion? Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 6. Chief, it's got money. Please, Chief Kirk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Christensen? Aye. Cope?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 no.
Senate file, or second reading amendment number 6 to Senate file 121 has passed. Second reading, amendment number 7. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
Senate File 121, second reading amendment number 7, page 1, line 10.
Senator Meyer?
Here, yeah, I got it. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 7 to Senate File 121 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this goes into several different areas, but I'll paraphrase it short and sweet. Essentially, it says, let's just back up, take a breath, and put the Casper office building on hold for a year. It'll be right back here for everybody that sits in these seats in a year to move forward on it. But the tall senator from Natrona County, I believe, is correct in looking at that at some point in time. We have to look at priorities, and we need to cut a little bit out of this budget, a little bit out of our different bills, and this will cut some money out, Mr. President. I think it's some 20-some million or something like that. So I think it's a prudent thing to do at this time. And if things go right, we start getting a lot more oil wells in different areas, maybe we'll be able to take a breath and when we come back here a year from now and tee this one up again. But for right now, we're sending it to the clubhouse. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 7 to Senate File 121. Chief Clerk, please call the roll on that one.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon? I'm sorry, Landon? No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Bonplater?
No.
No. Wasterberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing
Eli.
Vote.
Eli.
Closing vote closed. 23 aye, 7 no.
Everybody's
what?
Second reading amendment number 7 has passed. I think that's it. Senate File 121 having read two separate times. The question is, shall the Senate File be read a third time? Here, no objections. So ordered. Senate Joint Resolution 3. Reading clerk, please read in that joint resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 3, School Capital Construction Constitutional Amendment.
We do have an amendment. Reading clerk, please read that amendment in.
Senate Joint Resolution 3, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, lines 5 through 23.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment to Senate Joint Resolution 3. Mr. President, as this bill has progressed, and particularly discussion on Friday, I can what I was sensing from the Senate was that there was a good deal of agreement on the principles here and a good deal of unease on the details. And, Mr. President, I got a suggestion from a member of this body that I thought was very good, which was to limit the constitutional amendment to the broad principles and leave the details to legislation further on. And I thought that was very sound. It's good constitution writing, Mr. President, and I think it fits this circumstance very well. So that's what this does. It takes out the text of the proposed constitutional amendment and puts it back in the form that you see in front of you. And what does it do? Constitutional amendment provide the local school districts are primarily responsible for the school facilities and the use bonds. It means the voters, decision of the voters is final, so it can't be second-guessed. It says the cost of the bond shall be equalized so that the equalized up so that the school districts that have the lower assessed valuation can in fact build the facilities. It says the state financing has to be assured, and Mr. President, rather than selecting a motion, means it gives three broad options and lets the legislature pick. And five, this is something that is needed but wasn't in the original. It requires us to provide a means of deciding when facilities are not needed and shouldn't be subject to the equalization. So if somebody tries to build, say, a great grand water park you really don't need for education, we can say, no, that's not fair to equalize that. It provides the legislature can appropriate funds to relieve a hardship and provides that if something goes wrong in the markets and use of bonds becomes unwise, or if people want to go on a non-debt financing means, legislature can provide for that, providing there's a comparable means of equalization. And then the final thing it does, Mr. Chairman, is that requires a surprisingly small modification to the balance statement. And it does that because this takes out the sentence that was in there about major maintenance and leaves the amendment silent on that topic. So, Mr. President, what this says, if we adopt this, we're going to go back to the old bond issue system with an equalization provision to make it fair and make it possible for the districts to provide, and we're going to make sure that the state comes up with its share. And that, Mr. President, I think is what we're needing to do, and I urge the adoption of the amendment. Be happy to answer any questions.
Further discussion? Okay, we're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution 3. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment has passed. Senate Joint Resolution 3, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate Joint Resolution be read a third time? Hear no objection. It is so ordered. Senate Joint Resolution 5, second reading of the Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 5, promoting individual choice in health care.
Second Joint Resolution 5, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Joint Resolution be read a third time? Hear no objections. It is so ordered. Okay, reading and introduction of bills before you stand up, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. House Bill 122. Reading clerk, please read it in.
House Bill 122, Special Educators Workers' Compensation, sponsored by the School Finance Committee. Passed the House, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 122 will be referred to committee number 10, Labor. House Joint Resolution 2, first reading of the House Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 2, Commercial Driver's License Compact Agreement, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. Passed the House, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2.
House Joint Resolution number 2 shall be referred to Committee number 8, Transportation. House Bill 192, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 192, Legislature Communications on Recordings and Broadcasts, sponsored by the Management Council. Passed the House, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 192 shall be referred to Committee number 12, Rules. House Bill number 164, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 164, Overweight Vehicles, Agriculture Exemption, sponsored by Representative Greer. Passed the House, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 164 shall be referred to Committee number 8, Transportation. House Bill 35, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 35, Motor Club Services Updates, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. Passed the House, ayes 57, no 1, excused 2.
House Bill 35, refer to committee number 8, Transportation. House Bill 26, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 26, Post-Conviction Relief, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. Passed the House, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 26, refer to committee number 1, Judiciary. Okay, I believe we have a consent list.
Mr. President? Thank you, Mr. President. Before we move this consent list, I think that the staff needs to stretch our legs for 10 minutes, if with your leave.
The Senate will stand at ease until the sound of the gavel will give us about 10 or 15 minutes.